Are you in Romans chapter 11? Okay. So, Romans 11 kind of gives us a glimpse. This is really Paul's words to the Romans, right, obviously. And so what about the future of Israel? It's interesting. Mari and I have, I've been reading this little book, and in this book the guy tells uses an interesting phrase that we have adopted. You know, we can't worry about the past, right, because it's history. You can't worry about the future because it's a mystery. So all we have is, you know, today, and today is a gift that we need to enjoy. That's why it's called the present. And so, very interesting, don't you think? And so, you know, we can look back in the history of Israel, and the interesting thing about the Bible is it gives us a glimpse into the mystery of the future. But here we are right now in the present time of the nation of Israel, and we look at it. We have friends that live there. Many of you have been there with us before. We're going to go again, man. So what do we think? I mean, what does the Bible tell us about the Jews? If the reformists and the reformers are saying is true, is God then done with the Jews? Has, you know, the plan of God been nullified? Is it over? Did the Jews have their chance? Did they mess it up? And so chapter 11 was written for us to put our, to sink our roots into, to grab a hold of it with our hands and say, no, God is not finished with the Jews, and he will never be finished with the Jews until his plan of the future is accomplished. And so in this, you know, look what it says in chapter 11, verse 1. I say then, has God cast away his people? What does your Bible say? Certainly not. Okay, so any Christian that would say God is finished with the Jews, all they have to do is read Romans 11, 1, and it tells us, certainly not, okay? He's not, he won't, he never will. Paul goes on to say, for I also am an Israelite of the seed of Abraham, the tribe of Benjamin. God has not cast away his people whom he foreknew. Or do you not know what the scripture says of Elijah? And he goes on to tell us this interesting story of Elijah. Let's just read it real quick, okay? How he pleads with God against Israel, saying, Lord, they have killed your prophets and torn down your altars, and I alone am left. So he's using Elijah as his first little proof or illustration, if you will, of proof that God is not finished with the Jews. And he quotes and he turns us to this prophet Elijah, who is many, you know, maybe 1,000 years before Paul, right? And you remember the whole story where Elijah goes up to Mount Carmel, which we have been to. And he stands on Mount Carmel, has the big showdown between himself and the prophets of Baal and the prophets of Ashtaroth. And they do, you know, the big showdown. God ultimately wins. Fire comes from heaven, consumes the sacrifice, consumes the altar, consumes the rocks and everything else. And then Elijah turns, kills all of these false prophets that are living in the nation of Israel. And then all of a sudden, there's this one little problem, because there's this one little lady that happens to be living in Israel, in the northern section of Israel, who threatens to kill, you know, this prophet, saying, hey, I'm going to do the same thing to you that you've done to my prophets. And so Jezebel throws out this threat, and Elijah takes off running. Runs all the way down into the Saudi Arabia. That's how far this boy ran. So he was freaked out, right? So he gets down there, he hides in this cave, and he's, you know, and all of a sudden, you know, God comes to Elijah and says, Elijah, what are you doing here? What are you doing? And Elijah, you know, after he hears the still small voice, he says these words in verse 3. Lord, they have killed your prophets, torn down your altars. I alone am left, and they seek my life. Have you ever, talk about being in a place of self-pity. God, I'm the last believer of all the nation of Israel. I'm the last guy. And now they want to kill me. So interesting that Paul would say, let me prove to you that God isn't finished with Israel. Let's talk about Elijah the prophet. And we would look at that and say, well, that's an interesting proof text, but then look what it says. But what does the divine response, or in other words, what does God say to him? Elijah, hello, McFly. I have reserved for myself 7,000 men who have not bowed the knee to Baal. Even so then, at this present time, there is a remnant according to the election of grace. So basically, this first proof text of using Elijah, you know, as he, you know, God comes to Elijah and says, Elijah, what are you talking about? You're the last one left. You don't know what I know. You're looking at this from your vantage point, viewing it through your own fear. But Elijah, I got 7,000 other Jews in the nation of Israel that are on track. I got it. I'm taking care of this. You're not the only one. So in other words, God is saying, I know who they are. I know exactly where they're at. So Elijah, don't worry. Don't have a little pity party here. Get up. I want you to get back on your horse and ride back. And he gives them some instructions. And so, in other words, God is saying, Elijah, even if you don't see it, I have things under control here, okay? Because Elijah's saying, God, I'm the only one that's left. You don't have control of your nation. And God says, hello, Elijah, I have control. And so that proves to us then, as Paul uses Elijah as his proof text, that God is not finished with the Jews, nor then is he done with us as Christian people. As long as people are getting saved, God is not finished. God knows how many are his people. He's in control of the situation as he was with Elijah. He is still in control. Have you ever felt, though, sometimes as like you as a Christian saying, God, I'm the only one in my entire workplace, in this entire place, I'm the only Christian at the school that I go to. I mean, have you ever felt like you're the only one? Well, don't try whining to God, because he knows who his true kids are and he knows how many there are. So we just need to trust him. We need to keep our focus, our attention on Jesus, walk in obedience to him as he sends Elijah back, and then Elisha comes upon the scene. It's an amazing thing. So that's why, you know, Jesus himself said, hey, you seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness. All these things shall be taken care of. In other words, the past is history. Future is a mystery. Today is a gift. That's why they call it the present, okay? So just remember that one. So then, let's take a look now. Let's skip over to verse 11, and I'm going to show you another thing, okay? So then, this, I want to encourage you, because I have had, as I shared with you, lunch with a Jewish friend of mine, and it was, you know, a fun conversation, really was. It wasn't me trying to rattle his cage. I mean, I think, first of all, you guys, before we can really share with anybody anymore, we need to find out where they're coming from. I mean, in the days of us just walking up to people using the four spiritual laws, I mean, here's the thing. I can remember going through a thing called evangelism explosion. Some of us have been around for a while. You may remember it. Just walk up. You can just start right here. If you died today, do you know for a fact that you would go to heaven? Do you know you can't even use that anymore in our current culture? Let me tell you why. First of all, you got to find out if somebody even believes in the afterlife. I mean, many people say, well, I don't know about heaven. I don't really, because once we die, we die. Because we live in a culture right now, in this postmodern culture, where we got people that don't even believe in heaven, don't even believe in hell. They don't even believe in eternity. You see what I'm saying? So we are living in a more difficult time of sharing our faith. Not impossible, but more difficult. To where, first of all, we need to kind of find out, where are people coming? What do they believe right now? Where have they come to acquire that belief? And then we can begin to share our faith with people. So it requires a relationship. And so with this friend of mine, I've been building this relationship, trying to find out where is he coming from, So one of the things that we can then look at, and as you and I come in contact, and I believe that as I give you these tools, that God is probably going to bring you guys someone that will suddenly come into your circle that you're going to find out has some sort of Jewish background. And that's why you're here tonight, okay, because you're going to get some tools. So look what verse 11 says. Let's take a look. Find out, you now know about Elijah, okay? God is not finished with the Jews, because he wasn't finished with them during Elijah's time. He knows who are his. He's got it under control. But I will show you some more. Verse 11, I say then, have they stumbled that they should fall? Certainly not. In other words, have the Jews fallen to where they're out of the picture? No. But through their fall, to provoke them to jealousy, salvation has come to the Gentiles. What are you? What are we? For most of us in this room, we're Gentiles. So how did salvation come to us? Through the fall of the Jews. Through their mistake, through their blunder, through their rejection, God turned to you and he turned to me. More on that in just a moment, okay? Now, if their fall is, look at this, riches for the world. We talked about this when we did our Esther study. And their failure, riches for the Gentiles, how much more their fullness? For I speak to you Gentiles, inasmuch as I am an apostle, Paul speaking, to the Gentiles. I magnify my ministry. If by any means I may provoke to jealousy those who are my flesh and save some of them. For if they're being cast away is the reconciling of the world, what will their acceptance be but life from the dead? Radical statement Paul just made here, okay? This is an example Paul using right here, verses 11 through 15, that God is not finished with the Jews. He is not finished with these guys. And so Paul uses as his next example, and this is why I started here with you guys tonight, because I didn't want to use in the entire chapter 11. But here we are as Gentiles, and if you and I get an opportunity to sit down and talk to someone of the Jewish faith, you can point to yourself as the very reason why you know God isn't finished with Israel or the Jews. And this is kind of what I was doing with my Jewish friend the other day. My dad and I had lunch with him. It was very cool, okay? So the Jews, so think this through, what we just read right here, okay? The Jews have stumbled and fallen. I think we would all agree with that. They had Jesus in their midst 2,000 years ago. They had Jesus in their midst. They rejected God's plan for salvation for the most part. I mean, the church began as a Jewish movement. But then, as a culture, as a nation, they rejected him. But there were some, many, that did accept him. But as a culture, as a people, they rejected God's plan of salvation, which is faith in Jesus Christ. Okay? That was the message that Paul was bringing. Some Jews accepted that, but many rejected it, saying he can't be the Messiah, and for various reasons that they said, you know, God cannot come in human form, simply not going to happen. For a man to consider himself equal with God was absolute blasphemy, you see? That was, to them, equivalent to the Greeks and the Romans and their gods that, you know, come to earth. So they choked on that, even though all of their prophets foretold it. They choked on that, rejected it. So what then happened? As Paul said it himself, God then moves his attention to the Gentiles or the non-Jewish people that were living in that land, that were living in the land of Israel. God moved his attention to the Gentiles. Now, this part of God's plan has two components to it. Two pieces of this that's very, very interesting. First, God wanted to save us Gentiles all along. Did you know that? You can go back into the pages of the scriptures. Even when they did that first Passover, there were Egyptians that did it because out of that group came what is known as the mixed multitude. Gentiles came with them. So God had his plan. He didn't say, I'm only going to save the Jews. No, Gentiles were always a part of God's plan. But second, we see in this particular instance, God then, always wanting to save the Gentiles anyway, so now the Gentiles he's going to use to make the Jews jealous, his own people jealous. Now then, think this through. What's the point? If God is finished with the Jews, then why does he want to make them jealous by saving the Gentiles? If you can remember back when you were in the sixth grade, and you know you have your boyfriend or your girlfriend, and you know which okay or whatever you know back then we wouldn't classify them completely as boyfriend or girlfriend, but you get the picture, right? So they break up with you, and so then what do? You try to make them jealous. Why do you do that? Because you don't want to have anything to do with them? No, because you're trying to draw them back to yourself. And so the purpose then, if God was done with the Jews, why in the world would he say, you know what, I'm going to save the Gentiles to make my people jealous if it was not his intention to bring them back to himself? You get the picture? So it was his problem or his purpose all along was to bring them back. So now, think this through. If their fall, okay, the fall of the Jews, their disobedience, their rejection, okay, if all of that takes place, the Jews, here we are, let's do it this way. They fall, they reject God. Through that rejection, through that fall, are you with me so far? Through them, still working through the Jews, because God starts with the Jews, the Jew first, then the Gentile, you remember this. They fall, they stumble, they reject God, and yet still through them, we all get blessed. We get saved. You with me so far? Now then, Paul says, okay, if God's trying to bring them back to himself, think of this. How awesome will it be then if through their disobedience, and right now they're still in disobedience as a people, they still, as a people, even though many are turning to Jesus, but as a people, they're still walking in disobedience. So through them, we receive salvation. Through the Jews' disobedience and through their rejection, we got blessed. Can you imagine how amazing it's going to be when God puts it back into its proper order, the Jew, then the Gentile, when the Jews begin to walk in obedience, when they begin and they put their faith in Jesus Christ, can you imagine how radically the world is going to be blessed through their obedience? If we've been blessed through their disobedience, imagine when God comes back to his original plan and the Jews get saved and they as a people cry out to God. Then through them, can you imagine how radical the world is going to be blessed then? Through their obedience. That's an amazing thing to ponder on. Because we're pretty blessed already, wouldn't you agree? And even though it's beginning to happen, and it has happened, but it hasn't happened in its fullness according to part B of God's plan. So this is crazy. So this is why Paul feels the need. He at first struggled with the fact that he had to go minister to the Gentiles. At first, he didn't want to do it. Right? He was going, no, I don't want to. Gentile, I mean, he was a rabbi, you guys. Rabbis didn't talk to Gentiles, let alone sit down and eat with Gentiles. They considered us filthy, almost like animals. If they touched a Gentile, they have to go wash their hands, a ceremonial washing. Okay? So, Paul, a rabbi of rabbis, he could, you know, tout his heritage, and Now God is saying, I'm sending you to the Gentiles, Paul. Paul's going, why me? You know, let somebody else, let Peter do it, right? But Paul then, at a certain point of his ministry, began to understand, whoa, I see what you're up to. You're going to bless the Gentiles because the Jews have rejected. You're going to bless them. So I'm going to get after the Gentiles to make the Jews jealous so that we can get this program back on its right order. So Paul really begins to get after the Gentiles. He's like saying, come on, guys, in God's plan, it's to use you guys to make the Jews jealous. So let's make them jealous. It's an amazing thing. Did you know that there's this term right now? You'll hear Ahmadinejad. If you listen to him, he will never say Jew. He will never say Jewish. What does he say? Zionism. He will say the word Zionist or Zionism. Okay, he will say the Zionist regime. He calls the Jews the Zionist regime. Have you heard him say that? Okay, you know what? What that means is Zionism is this. The movement to restore Israel to the Jews. Okay, it's already done, right? But that's what he refers to it as. So, isn't it interesting, as we talked about this a couple weeks ago during our Purim service, isn't it interesting that Ahmadinejad right now says, I want to drive the Jews into the Mediterranean. I want to annihilate the Jews. Why would he do that? Could it be that Satan himself, because Ahmadinejad is basically being driven by Satan, let's face it, for him to stand up and say, I'm going to annihilate an entire people, and then you, us, United States, you're next. The West, Great Britain, us, you know, I'm going to annihilate you. That's satanic, you guys, okay? But could it be that Satan has recognized, God's blessing people still through the Jews. If they get right with God, then the world's going to be blessed even 100 times more. So could it not be that Ahmadinejad, driven by Satan himself, is trying to stop and put a dam or to put a cork in the flow of God's blessings to the rest of the world? You better believe it is. And so he doesn't know it because he's just a little puppet. Satan's going, you know, a little mouth saying, I will hate the Jews and I will destroy. He's just nothing more than a puppet, okay? So Satan doesn't want the world to be blessed. And isn't it interesting that if you were to go back, and you can do this on your own. You can do it, you can look it up on you know, the internet, that up until 1948, per capita, up until 1948, the amount of people that got saved, and there have been many, okay, from the Christian movement to 1948, how many people got saved? From 1948 to the present, quadruple, since Israel became a nation. The blessings of God flowing through the nation of Israel. Amazingly enough, that, you know, even and as we even speak right now, even though in our country we're slipping downward, okay, we are drifting from the moors that made us this great nation that we are. The underground church in China, the underground church in Iran. Did you know that? Here you got Ahmadinejad standing up there saying, we're going to kill you Christians. And he's got an underground church of Christians in his own country that is growing faster than the Christians are growing in the United States. Listen, the church, you know, you hear many people say, well, Islam is the fastest growing religion in the world. Not true. Because the underground, it's the fastest growing above ground, but underground, the Christian church is growing rapidly, you guys. The church is okay. Are we sick in the West? Of course we are. Have we become inoculated to the gospel? Yes. But is the church of Jesus Christ, not of Latter-day Saints, the church of Jesus, the true church, is it okay? Yes. It's okay, you guys. And God knows who they are, okay? But interestingly enough, how many of you here just out of curiosity, how many of us here, and I think we've talked about this before, but just a fun little statistic. How many of you here were saved from and during the period that is known as the Jesus movement? Let me see. I am. I'm one of them. Okay. Many of us in this room. So did you know that this thing that is called the Jesus movement began in 1967? Do you know it also culminated in 1967? The Six-Day War, where the Jews recaptured Jerusalem. Simultaneously with that, in the United States and in the Western culture, the Jesus movement exploded upon the scene. So let's think this through. In Israel, the Jews get into a war. They recapture Jerusalem, recapture the Temple Mount, by the way. Golda Meir gave it away. But God gives them back land, and at that moment, clear across on another continent, the Jesus movement begins. Calvary Chapel began in 1967. Do you see? Isn't this crazy? You could do the math and see all of this kind of stuff. So then, think this through, okay? When God again returns his attention to the Jews, which he will do, and they begin to respond to him, can you imagine how awesome it's going to be? There will be a revival like the world has never seen before, ever. But what about this whole thing of provoking the Jews to jealousy? It's an amazing thing. If a Jew, okay, were to enter a group of Christians, just think out loud with me for just a moment, okay? If a Jew, were to enter into a group of Christians, would he be jealous of the relationship that they have with God? Hopefully, right? We better hope they would, okay? If a Jew were to work with you, I pray that the Jew that my dad and I had lunch with the other day was provoked. Interesting. He was sharing with me that why the Holocaust is such a heavy thing for him is both his mom and his dad lived through the Holocaust. Both of them were in concentration camps. Both of them miraculously escaped. So I posed a question to him, okay? And this is because I hope that I'm making him jealous. Wow, I hope that my dad and I were provoking him to jealousy. But I asked this question. I said, I have a question for you maybe you know the answer, maybe you don't, but here's a question I have for you. When your mom and your dad were going through the Holocaust, what got them through it? Was it their faith in Judaism? Was it their faith that they believed in their Jewishness? Who did they pray to? Who did they cry out to? Did they pray to God and believe that God heard them? Did they have a relationship with God? And you know what his answer was? I don't know. I've never asked him. You know what's sad? They've never told him, obviously. And I said, and he says, but you know what? That's something that I need to go find out. Because if a man is going to say, I don't believe in God because of the Holocaust, but yet it was because of the Holocaust that his parents cried out to a God that they believe in, a piece is missing here. Do you see what I'm saying? And so for you and for me, if you had a Jew working with you, would they see the relationship that we have with God? If you were to sit down and carry on a conversation or have someone one in your circle, would they see what we have and become jealous of that? Would they look at that and say, man, I wish I had what you have with God? Would a Jew in our circle say, I want the kind of joy and the peace and the love that you have? I don't have that. I want that. Or would he only see the same thing that he sees everywhere else? Would he see our criticalness and our bitterness and our anger and our gossip and our complaining and our rebellion, our depression? Would he hear that we're doing the same thing that all the rest of the world is doing? You know, for me, that's something to think about, because does that make anybody jealous? No. So for me to note that Paul says he has saved you Gentiles to make the Jews jealous, I want to take a good hard look at my own life and say, wow, is my life something that a Jew would be jealous of? Man, I sure hope so. You see what I'm saying? Something that we can kind of reflect upon. And so You have been called, you as a Gentile Christian has been called to make the Jews jealous. Let your light so shine, Jesus said, before men that they see it. Don't put, you know, light it on our bushel. No, I'm going to let it shine. Okay? So, verse 16. Let's take another look at another proof text that Paul uses. Okay? Verse 16. For if the first fruit is holy, okay, meaning the Jews, the lump is also holy. If the root is holy, so are the branches. Now, and if some of the branches were broken off, meaning the Jews, and you, us Gentiles, Paul speaking, being a wild olive tree, were grafted in among them, and with them became a partaker of the root and the fatness of the olive tree, hey, don't boast against the branches. But if you do boast, remember that you do not support the root, but the root supports you. Okay? You will say then, branches were broken off that I might be grafted in. Well said. Because of unbelief, they, the Jews, were broken off, and you, Gentiles, us, stand by faith. So don't be haughty. In other words, don't start popping off, but be afraid. Look at this, verse 21. For if, you see the word if? Big word right there. He's going to use that a few times here. For if God did not spare the natural branches, he may not spare you either. Therefore, consider the goodness and severity of God. On those who fell, severity. But to you, Gentiles, to us Gentiles, goodness. Look at this word, if you continue in his goodness. In other words, keep holding on, keep moving forward. Otherwise, you also will be cut off. And they also, if they do not continue in unbelief, will be grafted back in. For God is able to graft them in again. For if, that's another big word, you were cut off from the olive tree, which is wild by nature, and were grafted contrary to nature and cultivated into a cultivated olive tree, how much more will these who are natural branches be grafted into their own olive tree? And that's where, this symbol back here, it's called the grafted in symbol. That's where it all comes from, that we, the Christians, have been grafted in to our Jewish root, you see. So then, let's think this through for this next little component, okay? You're going to always be able to turn to Romans 11 anytime. It would be cool if you're sitting talking to, you know, a Jew, you'll be able to reference it. If you ever talk to someone who says, well, you know, I don't know what you guys over there at Calvary Chapel, you know, you guys talking about this, all this Jewish stuff. Don't you know God's finished with the Jews? You can say, well, would you turn to Romans 11 with me? Let's talk about this for just a second, okay? Paul uses their own heritage as his next illustration. Now, as we know, Israel has a bunch, you know, of encounters, covenants, promises, many things that are directed at the Jew personally. So, all of these things that God has given to them as the Jews. And we as Gentiles have been grafted into this Jewish tree. Our roots are Judaism, okay? As I've shared with you guys before. And this would blew this friend of ours away as we sat there. Excuse me. When I told him, I said, because I told him we just had done a Purim service. He goes, oh, you did a Purim service? I said, yeah, it was a kick. And I could tell he wanted to say, why? Right? And I said, well, you do understand that apart from you guys, we got nothing here. Because I said, you know, our Christian faith began as a Jewish movement. I was telling him this, right? I said, listen, you know, Jesus himself, our Messiah, and I use that our because I couldn't say yours, right? Our Messiah was a Jew. The first followers of Jesus were Jews. The first Christian church began on Pentecost, excuse me. And so the first missionaries were Jews. And he was like shocked. And so I said, so for me, I want to teach our people about some of the Jewish tradition, but I also want to show them that if Satan would have been successful and stopped the Jews, we wouldn't have had our Messiah. It blew him away. It blew him away that we did a Purim service. But I was able to show him that had he stopped the Jews and annihilated the Jews, that would have stopped the Messiah, as we talked about when we went through that here. You see, if Haman would have won, Jesus would not have been able to come upon the scene. See, these are the kind of things that we can talk to Jews about. It will blow their minds because they've only heard just the story. But we have a messianic connection there. So that's us being grafted in. I can use the story of Esther and show how we as Gentiles are grafted into our Jewish root. You see what I'm saying? You with me? Yes? Okay, good. So here's the deal, okay? So is in this tree that we will call the Jews, or Judaism, or Jewish, or the Jewish people, are all the promises, the covenants, and all the blessings that God has made available to the nation of Israel. We've been, for those of you that have been faithful here on Thursday night, you've been hearing them, you've learned them, and we know what they are, okay? And so, but were they originally given to us as Gentiles? No. They were not given to us as Gentiles. They were given to the Jews, okay? However, they are now ours also, not ours as the reformists would say, because God's done with the Jews. No, they're ours in addition. They are ours. So they've become ours as well. So how did God do this? By our faith in Jesus Christ, as I was explaining to him using the story of Esther, okay? We now have become not the replacement of Israel, and the replacement of all of those things are now ours. We have become partakers with them of all of these blessings and promises. So they're ours with them. We become partakers of their heritage by our faith in Jesus Christ. He took us and said, Rob, this is where God has revealed himself, but now for you as a Gentile, I'm going to plug you into all of this stuff, and you get to enjoy all the rich blessings that God has promised to his people. You're now one of his people. So are all of you. As Gentiles, we've been plugged into this, okay? Now, some people say, but wait a minute, Rob, those promises were made to Israel. So, does God ever break a promise? Well, I certainly hope not. Because if he broke his promises to the nation of Israel because of their disobedience, what happens when you disobey? What happens when I disobey? Does God look at you and look at me and say, well, here's the deal, Rob. My precedent is Israel. I'm done with them because they messed up, and you messed up. That doesn't give me a whole lot of hope, guys, because I've messed up a lot. So therein, then, God cannot be done with the nation of Israel because they have, many of them say, well, they haven't received all those blessings. Right. Neither have I. But they're all ours. We just haven't appropriated them. You see what I'm saying? So now then, let's talk about the Jews being broken off. God said, okay, you want to disobey, you want to reject me? He snaps one off, snaps the branch off, okay, from this tree because of rebellious unbelief. They refuse to believe. And so what's interesting is now, snap, it comes off, but God's still watching over this tree, this root, this stump. We could call Israel stumpy, okay? Now he comes over and he grabs you and he grabs me, and in this place where it's broken off, he drills a little hole, he gets out his cordless drill, takes you and takes me, plugs us into this abundant promise and blessing that all that God has. Meanwhile, the branch down here that was broken off is withering, it's drying up. Why? Because it refused to accept what God was saying to them, okay? So now, we've been grafted in because of our faith. Is it because God looked at us and said, wow, you Gentiles are an amazing catch. You're awesome. I can't do without you. Did God choose us because of how awesome we are? I don't think so, okay? The only reason that he chose is because we believe. We believe what the Jews rejected, what the Jews refused to believe. We've said, I believe. And so God says, okay, because of your faith, I'm going to plug you into the promises that I made to them. So I've taken them off for a season of time so that I can plug you in their place for a season of time. Not that I've forgotten about them. I see them. They're drying up. They're withering. I see their leaves are gone. I can see what's happening down there. And so, you know, we are only connected because of our faith. So then, if we rebel and if we reject, we also could be cut off. We need the root in order to survive. So that's why it's so important to study the Old Testament. That's why it's so important to do a Seder service like we will do at the end of the month, so that we understand what is our heritage. It's an amazing thing, you see. So we need the root. So we, Paul says, okay then, now you Gentiles, don't go popping off thinking about how, you know, amazing you are, you know, that you think you're someone special and that God has done with Israel. Because to me, Paul telling us and warning us, that's a lesson in humility, saying, look what happened to these guys because they rejected him. So he's not done with them. The stump is still there. He's broken them off. They're drying, they're withering because of their unbelief. We've been plugged in. But Paul says, hey, if you want to go the same route that they went, I'll pop one of you guys off and let you dry and wither up as well. So don't be thinking that you know, are above, you know, being disciplined as well. And so then Paul kind of reminds that, you know, what happened to them can happen to us. And, you know, if he broke the natural branches off because of unbelief, he could do the same thing with us Gentiles if we got to the place where we refuse to believe. Can I ask you a question? The United States as a nation, would you say that it appears like it's just hanging? Are we starting to dry and wither? It sure looks like it to me. You know, the once this nation that began by its faith in God, that, you know, it was its origin, its root was Christianity, you guys. We've rejected God. As a nation, we're in unbelief, so it's almost like, snap, we're just hanging by the bark right now as a nation. And so we're headed in the same direction as a nation, if you will, that Israel did as a nation. And so, you know, it's an amazing thing that can happen to us as well. And so kind of it's interesting. It's a humbling thing for us, you know, that God can do that if we refuse. But in this, we see the goodness and the severity, or if you will, the firmness of God. Because for those who fell into unbelief, God deals with them severely as judging them, disciplining them. And he will do that with us. I mean, I've personally, unfortunately, had to go through a time like that, you know. But through those who approach God through faith in Jesus Christ, you know, God is amazingly good. His love and his grace and his mercy abound. If he says, you want to walk with me? My wife was having a conversation with someone just tonight, you know, that she gave this you know, person several different things of instruction on how to stay right with the Lord. She mailed a Bible, said, you know, start reading this Bible. He hasn't done any of it. And so how can we expect the blessings of God when we're going to reject him? You see? So, of course, dryness, spiritual discipline, all those kind of things will come. But then there's several ifs in here. One of them is in verse 22, that, you know, we need to continue in his goodness, not rebel against him, not walk away from God in unbelief. And, you know, honestly, real quickly, and I guess this is as far as we'll get, but I'll tell you in verse 25 through 36, God will use himself. But, you know, for me personally, I had to learn this lesson personally as a Christian. that you don't play games with the grace of God. I had to learn that the hard way. You know, the grace of God is this amazing gift that cost Jesus Christ the humiliation of the cross to be able to say, Rob, I'm going to give you love that you don't deserve and that you haven't earned. I'm going to give you a position in a relationship with my Father that you can't earn, you can't deserve. I give this to you if you just trust me. And that's an amazing gift. Cost me nothing, cost you nothing, but it cost Jesus the humility of the cross. You see what I mean? So it kills me when I see Christians trying to see how much they can get away with and still be classified as a Christian. Well, how much can I still do this and still, you know, be a Christian? And to me, it's like playing, and I've used the illustration with you guys, it's like playing Russian roulette, only with eternity. I had a friend of mine one time that we were talking about another friend who had walked away from the Lord, and I told this guy, I said, you know, unfortunately, he's put one bullet in the chamber, and he's given it a spin. And he goes, no, you know what? I don't think it's that way. And we're living in the last days. He put five in there and gave it a spin. It's more than just one out of six chance. It's five out of six. You see what I'm saying, you guys? Those are not good odds. But Jesus said, I am the vine, you are the branches. Okay? He was illustrating this truth of Paul's, and probably or Paul was using that as his text verse. He who abides in me, connects with me, stays continually, habitually in me, and I in him, we stay grafted together, that person will bear much fruit. And so it's an amazing thing. Our only security is to continue our life in Christ. Instead of trying to see how much sin we can get away with and still be classified as a Christian, I have learned that is not a good place to be. What I have learned now is I want to see how close to Jesus I can possibly stay. Instead of trying to figure out how much, it's kind of funny, we were, where were we at, Mari, when we saw that cow sticking his head through the fence trying to get the grass? Remember that? It's got to be in Ramona, right? You know, yeah, because he's in this dirted area, you know, and then he's got the little barbed wire fence, and he had his neck stuck through trying to get some grass on the other side of this fence, right? And probably getting all kinds of barbed wire burns all over his neck. And I know so many Christians that live their lives that way as well, man. Let's see how close we can stay to the goodness of God. So if God, then, this all comes back to this point. If God can graft us in, okay, going back all the way to this, I took a little long route to get there. If God has the ability to take us, wild branches, and graft us into the root of the olive tree, the promises and the blessings of Israel, and Israel has been broken off for a time, but they are the natural branch. If he can take us unnatural, wild and graft us in, can he then take his own natural branch and graft it back in again? So then he's not done with Israel. You see what I'm saying? He's not done with them. And he will never be done with them. And if you read verses 25 through 36, again, you know, God uses himself, you know, as the reason why, you know, God is not finished with them, you know, that... it's an amazing thing, you guys. In that particular section, you know, it talks about, excuse me, the fullness of time and the fullness of the Gentiles, right? You guys understand this is an amazing thing. God has a plan. His timing is at work. We look at our current political situation, we're saying, God, what's happening to our country? Look at what's going on. We would have to stand here tonight and tell you about government control of our speech. That I would have to tell you to see Peter and Aaron in the foyer to sign this petition so that we can stop the government from stopping me from saying homosexuality is a sin. from stopping our children from saying that, from stopping us from uttering those words, that we are living in such a time that we have to sign a petition for this. Do you realize how crazy that is? And yet, we sit there and go, God, what's going on in our culture? Do you think God is up there saying, oh my gosh, how did this happen? Rob, you better get back there and sign this document. Because if not, I don't know what I'm going to do here. Do you think God has lost control? No. That doesn't mean that we don't act. He's given us a season of time to act. But here's the deal, you guys. God is at work. His plan and his timing are at work. And you know what? According to that little last old passage, he knows when this season of grace, when the times of the Gentiles, what does that mean? When his attention upon the Gentile people, he knows when that's going to be over. Do you know when that is? I'll tell you when it is, okay? I can tell you exactly when that will be. When the last Gentile gets saved. No, when will that be? I don't know the answer to that, okay? But here's the deal. If you're here tonight and you're a Gentile and you haven't given your life to Jesus Christ, would you do it? Because you might be the last one. And at that moment, we get raptured out of here and it's all done and it's all over. God takes his church, okay? Then he will turn his attention back upon the nation of Israel. And you can read all about that whole story in the book of Revelation. He will turn his attention back upon the Jews. You know, it's in fact, in Isaiah 59, it says, the Redeemer will come to Jerusalem, says the Lord, to buy back those in Israel who have turned from their sins. 144,000 Jews will get saved. They will become these amazing evangelists through their own people. We will see revival like the world has never seen before. But unfortunately, it will be during the tribulation period. It will be during some of the most difficult days that this world has ever known. And so after all of that, Paul bursts out into praise because he says, God is in control. He's got a plan. He's working his plan. So if God didn't have a plan for the Jews, then why does he even give them their nation back? Why in 1948 did he give them their statehood back? Why are the prophecies being fulfilled? We have sat there. Mari and I and some of you have sat there. And the Bible says that old men will walk in the streets and children will be playing in the streets. We have watched it and seen it with our own eyes. We've seen kids on field trips looking at some of the history that we are looking at. And we're looking at that going, that's what God says is going to happen. Here it is. If he was done with the Jews, why would he bring them back? Why would little children be running around in the street? He's not done with the Jews, you guys. Because if he were, then what hope do we have? You see? So there you have it. We have finished our series. It was an amazing one. You guys can order this. I think, Josh, where did you get them? On Amazon? If you want to get that series, you can get it on Amazon. And it's an amazing one. For maybe some of you missed some of them, so you can get it. And so God is not finished with the Jews. We've just watched a series of videos that shows the miracles that God has gone through to keep those people alive. To move, did you guys remember the one with President Nixon? Do you remember that one? What caused him in 73 to send the massive amount of arms to Israel during the 73 war? What caused him to do it? When he was a little kid, his mom tells him, someday, son, you're going to get an opportunity to help the Jews. And when that opportunity comes, you're going to know what to do. Here he is as a man, known as an anti-Semitic man. He hears about the Jews' certain annihilation, and he remembers what his mom told him. Why would God do that if he's finished with the Jews? You see? He's not done with the Jews. Jesus, we thank you so much for who you are, for what you've done, for the miracle that we get to see, for the miracle of our salvation, the fact that we sit here tonight as Christians, saved, sealed, and as a part of your plan, Lord, I pray that our life would be so infectious that we would truly be able to make the Jews jealous. But also, God, the non-believers around us, that they would see our life and say, you know what? I wish I had that kind of joy. I wish I had that kind of peace, even though my life might be falling apart. So, Lord, let us live our lives in such a way that we are that salt and that light to a lost and dying world. And so, Lord, I pray for each one of my brothers and sisters here today that we have, may you set them up, God, with divine appointments with people of the Jewish faith. Give them the right words to speak to them. Lord, words of love, words of care, words of respect. And so, God, here we are. Use us. Send us out as a little military machine to be used by you in the kingdom. So we give you our night, Lord. Bless it. In Jesus' name, amen. Well, thank you, guys. Why don't you just stand up and